This episode of Manage Smarter is presented by Sales Fuel Coach, our adaptive sales coaching featuring 5-minute quick coaching personalized to each sales rep. Learn more about Sales Fuel Coach at salesfuel.com. Welcome to the Manage Smarter podcast with hosts C. Lee Smith and Audrey Strong. We're glad you're here for discussions on new ways to manage smarter, hire, develop, and retain talent, improve results, and propel team performance to new heights. This is the Manage Smarter podcast.
Well, Lee, today we want to talk about indecision, indecision being the enemy, according to our guest, Phil Jones. Hi, Phil. Thanks for coming.
Hey, pleasure for having me on the show.
Welcome to Manage Smarter, everyone. I'm Audrey Strong. I'm the Vice President of Communications here at Sales Fuel. And boy, have we got a great discussion for you today.
And I'm C. Lee Smith, the President and CEO of Sales Fuel. And I detect a bit of a British accent.
Yes, that would be true. I'm not putting it on. This is a real accent.
Well, I've enjoyed reading your books, Phil Jones. And for everybody who isn't familiar with you, Phil Jones, a best-selling author of Exactly What to Say, Exactly How to Sell, and Exactly Where to Start. He had his first business at just 14 years of age and is the youngest recipient of the British Excellence in Sales and Marketing Award. Nice. To date, more than 2 million people across 57 different countries have benefited from his lessons, and you are going to as well today. And as a result, they know how what to say, when to say it, and how to make more of the conversations count. Phil, welcome to the show.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.
So this idea of indecision being the enemy, it sort of wings its way into every aspect of business life, don't you think? It's kind of a problem across many different buckets.
Yeah, I think it's a problem everywhere, right? It's a problem within your potential customer base who are stuck in a position of maybe. There are leaders who are stood on the fence of like, do I go all in on this or do I hold back? And this position of not deciding or committing or fully moving forward with something, it slows people down. It's almost a point of friction. Mm-hmm. And without actually creating a decision towards I'm all in or I'm all out, then it's creating huge inefficiencies, whether it's in a leadership process, a sales process, or anywhere in between.
How would you help managers then become more all in or all out?
I think it's less about them being all in and all out, but the people they're looking to communicate with is what is that individual going to go on to be able to do? You see many leaders in organizations make suggestions or recommendations for changes in behavior, or you see them ask for a new vision to be employed or a new set of actions to be able to be employed. But what they don't always get is the buy-in of that other person. So they find themselves in situations like, I told you this before, or we've talked about this in the past, or, you know, why are we going over this thing again? And it's because the other person wasn't fundamentally bought in.
Well, is it because they weren't bought in because they chose not to be bought in, that they weren't given the rationale or the benefits of buying in? Or was it because the leader, the manager, was being indecisive?
It could be both. It could be both. I think, you know, sometimes that you find that the leader is being flirtatious with an idea or an action as opposed to being decisive, and they're hoping the other person picks it and runs with it, and then they don't need to take full responsibility for the outcomes of that themselves. But more often than not, I would probably say it's because they didn't get that full commitment from the other person.
That makes sense. You've got some questions that people should ask themselves to remove the friction and get things moving along. You want to rattle some of those off for our listeners?
Yeah, I think there's lots that we can look at. But before we get towards those key questions, it's understanding that it is a question that creates that clarity position. Mm-hmm. It's having the other person see what you're saying as opposed to hear what you're saying. And I want you to catch the nuance in that. Hearing what somebody says means it kind of came in at one level of knowledge, and it can also bounce straight back off again. Seeing what somebody is saying means that what you've done is you've created empathy in that scenario. You've stood and looked at it from another perspective, and therefore you've then accepted what that other person is going on to be able to say. So a big difference in that. So why don't you throw some scenarios at me and say, hey, if you were in this situation, how could you better get somebody to see what you're saying as opposed to hear what you're saying?
Yeah, there is a big difference. And then you ask yourself.
I have an employee then that keeps coming in late and doesn't follow the rules for coming in late.
Okay. So you've got two options, right? You can reprimand, you can say here are the consequences, or you could actually get them to be able to see things differently. So you could say it's unacceptable. You could say that what you've got is that you've got a set of rules and procedures, or you could ask the question and say, what kind of impact do you think it has on our organization by you continually arriving 15 minutes later than planned?
Interesting.
That's a good way of going at it. Yeah.
All right. What do you got, Audrey?
Oh gosh. I'm trying to think of something. I'm somebody who's a stickler for, project management. I'm a monster in project management. So when people aren't hitting certain benchmarks and deadlines, it just makes me crazy. So how would I tackle that?
So when we set out on this plan in order to be able to fulfill on this promise of this project, we all agreed dates and deadlines and checkpoints that we would have certain things done by. What I'm struggling to be able to understand is how that we're now at a point where we're past some of those deadlines. And as I rely on you delivering to your part of the project, I'm finding out that your part hasn't been completed to the level that was agreed. I'm wondering what's happened or what we failed to communicate in that scenario that means that we're now in a situation where we're letting other people down.
I love it because it puts them in the lens of understanding your point of view and the seat that you're sitting in, and it forces them to be empathetic and maybe step up.
And what it also does is it leaves us in a conversation that is firmly in a shade of gray. It is not saying that there is a black and a white scenario. It's allowing the other person to save an element of face if there is a reason. It's giving them the mild benefit of the doubt that says there could be some form of catastrophic scenario here that's prevented them delivering on their promise. We don't believe there to be, but we're leaving 2-4% in our shades of in our shades of gray to give them the position to step up.
We call that wiggle room.
just a touch of it, right?
That's right.
So we can go with one more example as well this, which is a very clear and easy way to be able to ask somebody to be empathetic. And all it is lifting a sequence of words from my book, Exactly What to Say. And it's the preface of the question, how would you feel it?
Yeah.
So how would you feel if you were in my shoes right now? How would you feel if you were responsible for leading this project and that some of the people that were responsible for key components hadn't delivered on their part? How would you feel if that you were looking to be able to lead a team and that one of your team members was continually showing up late? How would you feel if you were in my shoes?
So let me just throw another one at you. So let's say that corporate comes down with this really unrealistic expectation, whether it's a sales goal, a productivity goal, or something like that. And, you have to coach or manage somebody then who's not bought in, who thinks it's unrealistic, who's speaking out against it and not performing to the level that corporate expects them to deliver to.
Okay.
That's a difficult spot for a manager to be in.
Yeah. So this is the manager looking to be able to improve the performance of a team member. First thing I want for this scenario is, does the manager believe that the targets and expectations from corporate are realistic?
Chances are not.
Okay. So I think this is something that we then have to tackle, right? Is are we asking us that we've got the employee doesn't believe what you believe as the leader, or are we in a situation where what we're looking to be able to do is to say that we've all got a job to do? They're two very different things. And I think what we should be able to look to be able to do is that if it's that latter that you've just presented it as, is I think we need to bring empathy with us and the person we're looking to be able to lead and put ourselves on the same side. We're going to do this with a polite opening, a mutually agreeable fact, and then what we're going to be able to do is we're going to deliver a question on the end of that. So, the polite opening to this conversation would be, is that you understand that I have the responsibility of being able to lead you and everybody else in your position in this given role. The fact of the matter is that we've been given these targets to be able to achieve via our corporation, our leaders, and we have stakeholders in order to be able to be responsible and accountable to us. So what I've done is I've come and created some mutually agreeable facts there. The question that I'm then going to ask is, do I have your commitment that you're at least going to try your best towards achieving as much as we possibly can towards these targets?
I love the structure of that. I mean, it's simple, but you're creating an expectation of a certain type of answer that hopefully you'll get.
we're gonna get an answer we can work with, right? Either committed to be able to give this a go, or no, it's unrealistic. I can't be prepared to work under this kind of pressure.
Well, so what would the follow-up questions be? So you get an answer from them. It's like, I know in one of your books or whatever, you have a list of some really short follow-up questions that pretty much you can apply to most situations. I think that might be apropos here.
Okay. So let's just say that, give me the version back. You be the employee and we'll see where we take this.
Yeah, I just don't think the corporate understands, you know, what it's like then, you know, to be, you know, at this level performing in this role. There's no way that I'm going to be able to get X, Y, and Z done by next Thursday.
Okay. And when you say that there's no way that you would be able to do that, how certain are you that everybody else in the organization agrees with you?
Well, I know. I talked to Susie at the water cooler or whatever, and she feels the same way. And I'm pretty sure that most people on the floor, you know, will agree with me.
Okay. And the question I ask you is, how certain are you that everybody would go about it that way around?
Now, this is very good lawyering on your part.
But I'm asking them to see that what there is that there's an opportunity that there are some people who are out there actually doing the work right now.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think the difference is between the person that's out there and actually putting their effort and energy into supporting the conversations with their customers to be able to help achieve this number versus the people that are having the conversations at the water cooler?
What's the better use of time? The water cooler.
Mm-hmm. Right. And all I'm looking to be able to do is to ask questions so they can see what I'm saying, right? Is if I'm saying to them, look, if you just spent more time out speaking to other people than you did gossiping with people out at the water cooler, then what you'll be doing is you'll be getting closer towards that target. Now what I am is I'm aggressive. Now what I'm doing is I'm creating a defense in that other person because their little voice inside their head is saying, yeah, but Susie said, yeah, but like, what about this? And yeah, but like, I've got the biggest territory. Or yeah, but like we maxed out last year, so I can't get the headroom in it. And all these excuses come. The second I talk in terms of questions, I can never get it wrong. Because if they don't see what I'm saying the first time round, I get 15 more goes.
And you maintain control of the conversation by asking questions.
You betcha.
I think it's interesting how a lot of people always see metrics that seem ambitious as a negative as opposed to a massive opportunity to shine.
And I think
I don't know. Why are we all wired that way?
Well, I think everybody wishes it was easier.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think that's what it comes down to, is that we wish it was easier until it comes to the point where there's recognition. Mm-hmm. Then when there's recognition for achieving success, we wish it was really harder now that we're the other side of the work. Because then what we would achieve is a higher level of recognition. So how do you use that psychology in these types of conversations? What you end up doing is that you use that to throw down a challenge with people.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just put this into perspective. Is how would you feel if that you were one of the few that actually went out and achieved these targets?
Like a rock star.
Mm-hmm. And answer me this, is how many other areas of your life do you feel like a rock star in?
Yeah, well, that's a whole other story for another day. Just kidding.
But you see, right. The humor that can come from that too starts to break the ice in a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
What we can then say is, so what better opportunity have you got to shine? We've got 2/3 of the company saying that this isn't possible. We've got 1/3 of the company that's saying that they think they give it their best shot. Which percentage of the company do you want to land in?
Mm-hmm.
That's great.
So it's asking questions that kind of flip the switch from stop wishing that it was easier and start wishing you were better.
Yeah. And what we should be looking to be able to do is to ask the other person to choose. Great leaders on this world are brilliant at asking questions. They give way less advice than people think that they need to give. And I think one of the biggest mistakes that many leaders make, particularly when they're in middle management roles or they're new to leadership or they're aspiring, is they need to be seen as the hero.
Mm-hmm.
And the trouble is, if you're the hero, everybody else you're looking to influence isn't. The responsibility of a great manager isn't necessarily to be the hero, it's perhaps to be the guide. And I was having this conversation with somebody the other day, trying to get them to see what I'm saying. I asked them the question. I'm going to ask the same question of you right now. Have you seen any of the Harry Potter movies?
Sure.
Yes.
So Harry Potter books, Harry Potter movies, there's a huge leadership lesson within those books. The mistake that almost everybody looks to be able to make is that they think of themselves as the hero. Now, Harry Potter is the hero. Let's just think, if the manager wants to be Harry Potter, that's them trying to be able to take the hero status. What they should really be looking to be is they should be looking to be Dumbledore.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever their product is or whatever their project is or whatever the outcome they're looking for, that's the wand.
Mm-hmm.
So the product or the opportunity or the project becomes the tool to help be able to achieve it. the person you're looking over to be able to lead is truly the hero in this story. And your responsibility as their leader is that you are the guide. You are not looking to be able to take the applause. You look to be able to achieve the applause that comes later once the hero completes the mission. And you win by the second proxy applause as opposed to the hero moment. And that's how a leader gets to jump from one position, not just to the next position, but go on to be able to find themselves in huge positions of leadership because they're responsible for the result and the outcome and the thing that's bigger than the moment.
Yeah.
I know, Audrey. I'm having a craving right now for some chocolate frogs.
I love that. And isn't that part of what you say when you say in your book that you should plan your victories? So it's almost like you, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy and you can make your critical back path backward from that day, like you said.
You bet. Yeah, we talk about this in exactly where to start is how what you can do is you can plan those victories out ahead of time. In doing so, you know where your new milestones are. Too many people in corporate roles, they let the corporation decide where the milestones are. There's nothing that says you can't create your own ones that are either in line with that or perhaps even past that and then put your little celebrations on those. And what I've learned to be true from the thousands of organizations that I've worked with through the years is the people who set their own standards that go on to achieve excellence, not the ones that continually surpass the standards that are set by their employer.
Yeah, I think that the revelation for me and is, I love what you're saying, and that you said, let the employee that you're coaching up realize that there's a that he or she has a choice. But when you're given these metrics from the top down, from the mothership, it always used to feel, at least to me, like...
It doesn't feel like a choice.
It doesn't feel like a choice. But what I think is wonderful that you're saying it absolutely is a choice.
Mm-hmm. You can 100% choose how you want to go and approach that reality, right? There's thousands of the things that in this world that we cannot control. But what we can control is how we feel about it, how we think about it, and what we do because of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So control your controllables, which is another phrase I love from your book.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
You offered some advice on asking for targeted feedback. I think that's an area then too, is like when we have that indecision, you know, maybe we're concerned about what feedback or what pushback we're going to get by making that decision. So shed some light on that for me.
Yeah, give me some context again, and let's see if we can jam it out in real time and give people some more precise responses.
Well, in your book, I'm reading, like, instead of asking, what do you think I should do? Ask, what would you do if you were in my shoes? You kind of, you kind of touched on that one a little bit as well. Or instead of asking, how much should I charge? You say, what have you seen others with my experience charge?
Correct. And what we're really looking at in these situations is that when you're asking for advice from others, is to create this gray space again, where what they can do is they can feed new data into the scenario without you ever telling somebody that they are wrong. Mm-hmm. If I say to you, what do you think I should charge? And you give me a number I don't like the answer to. Now, all of a sudden, we've created the conflict scenario. We've created a piece of indecision. If I say, what have you seen other people charge for similar types of services? Then what I get is I get some data back in that is useful truth for us to be able to have a more expanded conversation from. When you say, what do you think I should do? What you're asking somebody to do is to project their opinion on you in its entirety. And then if you don't like the opinion, and again, we've got a conflict scenario. If we say, if you were in my shoes, what would you do by alternative? Then what we've got is we've got them having the permission to actually be able to say what they would do, which is really them telling you what they think you should do, but with enough gray space in it again, that you can accept all of it, some of it, or none of it without any loss of friction or any loss of momentum in the conversation.
That's fantastic. I'm going to be asking a lot of questions from now on, Lee. When you talk to me or ask me a question, I may ask you answer with another question.
There's no harm in that as long as what you're being is you're looking for further clarity.
Yes.
As opposed to being evasive.
Or annoying. Yes.
Well, Phil, we've got a couple minutes left. Everybody, it's philmjones.com. Your Twitter, philmjones UK. I know you have a lot of clients. You work with a lot of people. How would you like people to reach out to you from our audience if they want to engage with you, Phil?
Yeah, I think if they want to just join the conversation, they've enjoyed what they've listened to, come find me on Twitter, on Instagram, on LinkedIn. If you can't find me through a simple search, I'm doing a lot of things wrong. But yeah, find me via the website at philmjones.com. And then, yeah, we'd love to be able to continue the conversation from there.
And we love the books. They're so great. It's such an enjoyable read, easy to read and retain the information. I really loved, I appreciated you sending us sample copies.
That was very nice. Yeah. Great
short
read. little book. You don't have to spend, you know, it's not like a Harry Potter book or something like that.
5,000 pages.
Nice quick read. You know, read it on the train, you know, there and back, you're done. It's great.
Thanks, Phil. Well, we appreciate you being on the show. And if you enjoyed our conversation with Phil, please give us a rating and subscribe and review. 5 stars for Phil, please, and our little team here. We certainly appreciate it, and we thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and recommend on iTunes, Overcast, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also get more great information at salesfuel.com.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.